I want to thank you for tuning into the Naked Podcast. I'm your host, Emma Hislop, and today I'm interviewing someone incredibly inspiring. Her name is Maya Penn. She founded her own sustainable fashion brand when she was just 8 years old. From there, Maya has gone into the public speaking space, and she delivered a TED Talk that has literally gone viral. However, Maya is more than the CEO of her own company and a public speaker. She is also an author, an animator, and a philanthropist, and I'm probably missing some pieces of the puzzle here. However, I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of recording with her. Her story is incredibly inspiring, and I hope you enjoy this episode. So I want to thank Maya Penn for joining me on the podcast today. Maya has done amazing things in her life. She first started her own company at just 8 years old. From there, she has developed a book. She has done public speaking. She's been on multiple TED Talks. And I'm going to let Maya take it over from here because she can explain herself better than I can.
Yeah, thank you so much, Emma. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I really love the platform that you've cultivated for kind of eco-conscious and wellness. And it's just really awesome to be a guest. So just kind of in a nutshell, I'm Maya Penn. I'm 20 years old. I'm an environmental activist, an animator, filmmaker, a Simon & Schuster author. I've given 3 TED Talks, and I'm also a sustainability consultant as well. And it's really exciting to be able to share my story and be able to kind of share my journey with you. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to this.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining me again. And I guess I wanted to go back to, when did you start to become interested in sustainability? Because I think this has only really become a buzzword, and I want to say in the last 5 years. And I think you've been ahead of the curve on so many things. And when did this interest in sustainability start for you? And what does sustainability mean to you?
So I've always kind of grown up in a sort of eco-conscious household, in a sense. You know, there is always emphasis around recycling, conserving electricity and water. And, you know, so I was, you know, very aware of that. And also, you know, connected to nature because, you know, we started an organic garden, as a kid, and, you know, but all of that was kind of around me. So I was very aware of sustainability, and the way that I kind of incorporated it into my work with art and design was through getting into fashion design. So I started my sustainable fashion line, Maya's Ideas, in 2008 when I was 8 years old. And I started doing a lot of, you know, research about the fashion industry and the impacts that it has on the planet. And that's when I decided to make that a big part of my mission and what I do. The fashion industry itself, you know, some of the statistics at that time were that it was the second largest polluter of our environment, second to oil. And the, you know, those data keeps updating to show just how much of a huge impact that it has across the world. So that's why I knew that I wanted to make that a big focus of what I do. And really what sustainability means to me is just being really conscious of the impact that we all have and kind of analyzing different areas of your life and seeing how you can make them more green or more eco-friendly and more eco-conscious. Everything that we do has some sort of negative or positive impact on the planet. And so it's kind of getting in that mindset and kind of teaching yourself to think about that in a way you might not have thought of before.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really good point also that when we think of sustainability, a lot of us don't even think of fashion as a contributor to any negative impact that it's having on the environment.
Absolutely. Because I do a lot of public speaking, and I've spoken to so many different groups of people, especially a lot of people that are interested in sustainability and even like live sustainable and kind of eco-conscious lifestyles. And so they might, you know, think about the transportation. They drive an electric car, they take public transportation, or they have a plant-based or vegan diet, and they, you know, recycle and they repurpose and all these different things. But then I will ask, so like, what's in your wardrobe? What kind of effect does that have on the environment? And they've never thought about that before. Like, it's never crossed their mind until then. But that's starting to change now. You know, I've been in the sustainable fashion and just the environmental activism space for 12 years now, technically. And I've just seen how much it's changed and how much more educated consumers are becoming. And it's really hopeful to see.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot more sustainable brands come to the market now. However, I have heard that some materials that these companies are using aren't really sustainable. And what is really a sustainable material or fabric to use when you're producing clothes?
Yeah, so really when it comes to sustainability, the very first goal should be what can I, not have to use more of. It's a kind of less is more sort of thing when it comes to sustainability. What can we reuse? What can we repurpose? That's something that's really big to also prevent a lot of textile waste as well. But then when you're using actual new materials, it's important to focus on bio-based textiles. So that can be based from bamboo, hemp, cotton, organic materials, and so on and so forth. But then there's also looking at factors like how much, water consumption and how much energy consumption, like does it take to produce certain plants and certain crops? So you can get down to like little kind of small details to be able to make the most efficient decisions when it comes to what textiles that you select. But it's really about trying to repurpose and reuse as much as possible, extend the life cycle of certain textiles, even if they're not bio-based. For example, recycling plastic is one way to keep plastic out of the landfills for longer. But it's also important to remember that recycling kind of just slows down the issue of, for example, the plastic industry and overproduction of plastic waste. So it's important to also think about what can we do and produce that doesn't really add to the problem, like using bio-based materials. And it's a really cool time to be in sustainable fashion because there's so much experimentation that you can do. There's so many new cool technologies and innovations happening all the time. And, I'm working with like biofabrication and material science to create new textiles, like lots of super cool stuff that I'm really excited that's coming into the space now. We have so much ability to create new textiles that solve so many problems at once. And so it's really cool to see that there's more of a demand for that now as well, just in the market.
Yeah, for sure. You definitely see more of these companies coming into mainstream media, which is nice to see. But one thing I think that a lot of people think about when they think about sustainable fashion is they think it's going to be super expensive and that it's completely out of their reach. And they're like, no, I can't do that. So what are some of your tips that you have for people who are on a budget and they don't want to splurge on these more expensive sustainable brands and they want to help out the planet at the end of the day?
Yeah. So that is a big question that I get. And there are definitely solutions for that. If you can't support some of the sustainable fashion brands that might be out of your price range, the good thing is there are so many other ways to practice sustainability through your shopping habits. So whether that's buying secondhand clothing or buying vintage clothing, which is the majority of my closet other than my own sustainable designs and other sustainable designs, that's a big one. And also extending the life cycle of the pieces you already have is very huge as well. You know, like if you have a pair of jeans that just doesn't really fit how you want them, fit how you prefer anymore, is there a way that you can do like a DIY project and turn them into something new? You can turn like old t-shirts into tote bags, and you can, it's important to also learn how to mend and repair your clothing as well. There are a lot of people that are now doing classes and like online classes for these sort of things too, because that is really huge to extend the life cycle of that piece of clothing so it doesn't end up in the landfill as soon, because every item and every material on the face of the earth will have like an end to its life cycle, so to speak. So if you as a consumer can extend that, that really makes a huge impact And, you know, brands pay attention to that. I've seen how there's such a huge shift in brands noticing consumers' buying habits, what they buy and what they don't buy, and how much they consume and how, you know, less they consume. It's really interesting to see, you know, that that's such a commonplace now for some, but such a huge portion of consumers, that the fashion industry is really listening to this. So, you know, buying secondhand, you know, mending your clothes, repairing your clothes, buying vintage, all of those things are really great ways to be able to live eco-friendly through your wardrobe on more of a budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love those tips because it is definitely affordable for everyone and it is accessible. You can go to thrift stores and vintage stores, like you said, and expand the life of your clothing. But I want to know a bit more about Maya's ideas, what you produce. And I know you mentioned to me when we were speaking earlier about some of your proceeds go to different non-for-profits.
Yeah. So Maya's ideas focuses in eco-friendly fashion designs that are made from either organic, recycled, or vintage materials. All of my pieces, for the most part, are kind of limited. There are very few pieces that are kind of mass produced. Like I would say, like 80% of the designs that I have, they are limited run, which is also more sustainable. And it also plays into the fact that a lot of the materials that I use, I really can't find again. I'm using vintage fabrics, or I'm using remnant cloth, or, you know, pieces that I'm literally just kind of can't find again. And I might be able to make 20 organic burlap bags with this piece of vintage cloth that I'm using for the design, for example. So it's kind of cool in that way. You get something that's really, you know, unique and maybe only one or a few of a kind. And you're also, you know, contributing to the sustainable fashion industry and sustainable fashion movement at the same time. And I also use plant-based dyes, fruit and vegetable dyes, even herbal teas to dye a lot of my designs. Any paints that I use are completely non-toxic. And it's really about reusing and experimenting and trying new things. And it's something that's been a really cool experience for me. Like, personally, as an artist, I feel like I'm having more fun designing as a sustainable designer than traditionally, because there's always like a problem that has to be solved. There's always like a kind of extra creative muscle you have to use to figure out, how can I achieve this aesthetic while still making it as eco-friendly as possible? And so it really just started from me making headbands out of remnant and scrap fabric I had around my house at 8 years old. And then as I started, you know, evolving and getting better with my skills, then I started making hats, scarves, tops, bags, jewelry, like you name it. And so now I have a wide array of products and accessories. So it's been a really cool journey for me to start and grow this business into a global brand.
I love that. And that's kind of how you launched your career that you have today as well. And I guess starting out with the clothing and everything, it really, you got to explore that first step in creativity and evolving your career. But I also want to know more about public speaking and activism. So I was wondering, what launched your career into the public speaking space?
Yeah, so public speaking is something that I did not expect at all when I started my brand, because when I started Maya's Ideas, it was just, I want to solve this problem of sustainability, the lack of it in the fashion industry, and provide an alternative for people that want to shop sustainably. And I also just want to have this creative outlet to share my art and design. But then I started getting contacted by people that wanted to, you know, have me share about my work and how I started to help inspire other people. So I actually, my first public speaking engagement that I remember, I was 11 years old, and it was a local school here in Atlanta. And it was kind of like an entrepreneurship day, and they were teaching youth about entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship, how you can give back and make a positive difference through your business. And so that was my first encounter with public speaking. And then it started to just evolve from there. I started getting more speaking requests, and I started, you know, kind of figuring out my flow and honing my skill over time. And then by the time I was, 12, I was approached by TED here at one of the TED Talks in Atlanta. And then when I was 13, I was approached by the official TED Women talks that they do, like, and that's a global TED conference. So between that span, by the time I was 13, I'd already done 3 TED Talks, which is really crazy to think about. And just being able to have that platform to speak on sustainability and speak on, you know, using what you're passionate about and using your creativity to make a difference in the world and sharing that story, that's just been really was a really amazing experience for me. And that TED Talk that I did led to so many other opportunities. It has almost like 2 million views now. And I started getting so many people reaching out to me wanting advice and saying they were inspired by my story and they wanted to start their own sustainable fashion line, or they wanted to start their own nonprofit, or they wanted to get into animation, which we'll talk about later. And all of that was just so amazing to see how much of an impact, you know, my voice, you know, has. And it's really kind of shaped me a lot as a person, knowing that just through doing what I'm passionate about and doing what's important to me and sharing that with other people, how much it can change other people's lives and educate other people about what's happening in our world. One of the last talks that I did before COVID-19 was I spoke on a panel that Teen Vogue was hosting about Gen Z and sustainability and kind of how those two things go hand in hand, and just being able to share that perspective and educate people and seeing them, you know, learn more about this area that I'm so passionate about. I think it's really great for all young people, especially, to kind of dip their toe into, even though it can be kind of nerve-wracking. But once you get the flow of it, it's really great to pursue, I think.
That's incredible. And like you said, it is definitely nerve-wracking. Like, I'm the type of person, I started my Instagram and my podcast, and I've always been a shy person. But once you share your voice and people want more, they're inspired, then you're like, I have to continue to share. And it's like the most empowering feeling ever. And I have never done a TED Talk, but I'm sure it feels incredibly empowering. And something that I want to kind of jump into, though, is how do you think we empower our generation and future generations to be global citizens and leaders in our communities? Because I think so many people are like, oh, like, that looks cool, but that's too out of my comfort zone, or I could never do that. But something I always tell other people is, like, you have to look at yourself as a leader and not a follower. And that's my take on it. I want to know what yours is as well.
Really, that's exactly it. And, you know, I think especially young people, and that's starting to shift a little bit, but it's still very common to see young people feel, just because of the fact that they are young, that they're not qualified. They feel like they're not qualified to speak up or use their voice in a certain way, or to be in a certain space, or to be a leader in a certain space. And that is not true at all. And, you know, there's been more of an uprising of young activists for this generation, which has been really awesome to see. But, you know, when I started my sustainable fashion line and I started this journey through environmental activism in 2008, you know, I really didn't have anyone to point to at that particular time period that I could kind of have as a point of reference. And then even in the kind of entrepreneurship space, words like kidpreneur and teenpreneur and these words you see now didn't exist. And there weren't a lot of youth activists really at all at that particular time that I could look to as a point of reference. So I kind of had to build this myself from scratch, sort of. And the fact that I've been able to inspire other young people to, you know, use their voice in a powerful way is just something that I'm so, so grateful for, because everyone's voice, everyone's experience is so crucial and so important and so necessary. And especially when it comes to environmental issues, Gen Z, you know, it's been kind of talked about that Gen Z pretty much feels like the last hope, which is super scary and a lot of weight to be put on our shoulders when it comes to what's happening with climate change and all these other issues. But that makes it even more important to why our voices need to be heard, need to be respected. Anyone who is listening, there is a space for you to use your voice to empower, inspire, or educate others. Everyone's voice, opinion, and experience matters and can shape the world around them. And it takes a while to kind of fully realize that, but once you start acting upon it, you will see just how much of an impact you have by speaking to what you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm. And I think that everyone has something valuable to share, and everyone can learn something from someone else. Like, that's the thing that I think a lot of people are discouraged by. They're like, oh, well, I don't have anything to say, or like, no one will get any value from me. And you're like, actually, like, everyone has a story that's worth sharing. Exactly. And that's why I started the podcast, because it was like, we all learn from each other. And that's like literally the only way we can learn to do things differently and better. And I guess another question I want to ask you though is, if anyone listening is interested in public speaking, what tips would you have for them, and how can they kind of dip their toes in that industry?
Yeah. So first of all, it's thinking of, well, figuring out your story, your passion, and your topics is a big one. The more you can speak to something that you are really, truly passionate about, the easier the whole process will be. Of course, that was, you know, that's what I've done. Everything that I speak about, I'm extremely passionate about, whether it's youth activism, sustainability, art and design, and all the different topics that I speak on. They're all things that I care deeply about, and I know a lot about, because there's something that get me really excited. So that's something to, of course, hone in on. And even if you don't know what that is yet, you know, start to kind of figure that out. Like, what is that when you on social media and you see a cause or a story that, you know, really touches you or breaks your heart, or you want to make an impact in, like something that really gets you going, whether it's sustainability or in climate change or homelessness in your community, or, you know, helping marginalized groups of people, like whatever that is for you, what you see on the news or you see on social media, if you want to focus in activism, find whatever that is that really gets you fired up and kind of gives you that spark that you want to do something about it, and educate yourself on it as much as possible so you can really speak to it in a way that is educational and compelling for people that will be listening. Trust in your voice and trust that people want to hear what you have to say, because I think a lot of young people feel like, well, why would people want to listen to me specifically speak about this thing? But the thing is that the audience is not really judging you like you think that they are. They are hearing and learning from you. They're there to listen and to have you educate them or inspire them, and just hear about whatever it is you're talking about and have to say. You don't want to think of them as just a group of people judging you. These people are, you know, excited and interested in whatever it is that you have to speak on. And so you have to respect the fact that they're there to learn, really. And then another thing too is to, of course, you know, kind of do as many practices as much as possible. Learn to project your voice. Learn to continue to speak even with distractions happening in the background. Something that I used to do when I was preparing for my TED talk, I did this a lot, is that I would speak and like I would practice my talk while I had the TV going really loud. And so I could just kind of keep going without being distracted. And that also helps you to not distract yourself. Kind of your thoughts might come into your head and you might be like, oh, well, did I forget that? Or did I do this? And you can kind of just keep moving, like learning to keep moving, even if you, you know, forget a part or you, you know, miss a bullet point, just be like, okay, let me keep moving. I can come back to this later in the talk. It's really about improv a lot too. And just being confident in your voice and also respecting your nerves. Like, I think when people feel nervous, they're like, okay, I have to push this down. I have to get rid of this. I have to get rid of this fear. I have to get rid of this anxiety. And that doesn't help. It just kind of escalates, you know, that feeling even more. You have to kind of be friends with it and just put it in the back seat. Like, it can be there. It just means you're human. And the best speakers in the world get nervous. So all those things, those are just my general tips. All of those things are really helpful, I think, for anyone who wants to get into public speaking, is to make friends with your fear, learn to be confident in your voice and project, and to learn how to improvise and keep going, even if you have slip-ups, because all the best speakers in the world do.
Mm-hmm. I really like make friends with your fear, because so much of what, you know, we do in life, we're like, okay, that makes me nervous, I'm not going to do that. But it's pushing past that fear, because if you don't, like, how are you going to get anything done at the end of the day? That's what I always think.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can't just like bury it or like throw it away. It's just going to be there, and you have to just be like, okay, this is here. This is just a sign that I'm a human being and that I have feelings, and that's cool. I'm still going to do great. And it's just going to just be there in the back seat, but not in the driver's seat. You know, that's the key. Like one thing I like to say a lot that comes from my book is to do it afraid. And like, there's nothing wrong with being nervous and still like doing something awesome at the same time. Like, they can coexist together. You know, you don't have to have some sort of magic transformation into being confident or brave. You just have to do it. And that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I love that. And I want to get into veganism, because when we were chatting earlier, you talked about veganism. I'm wondering, have you always been vegan? And if not, what tips do you have for people that, you know, are interested in the vegan lifestyle?
So I've always, like, especially my mom, we've always been like plant-based. And even when I was 2 years old, my mom was doing like raw and vegan diets, and like she's always eating organic and kind of clean. And so that was something I was familiar with. And when I was, you know, getting even deeper into my environmental activism and having this passion for nature and animals when I was 12, I just flat out decided, okay, I'm gonna become vegan. So from there, I, you know, became vegan, and it was just kind of a process. And the tips that I have for people who want to, you know, get into plant-based or vegan diet is, first of all, you have to transition yourself into it. I see a lot of people just kind of wake up one day and they're like, okay, I'm vegan now, and then they just cut out all the animal products, and then they're stuck with like, wait, what do I eat now? You know, and the key is that first of all, what I did, because, you know, I was starting this at 12, what I did was I just started with the animal products that I cared about the absolute least, like whatever I just didn't really like, I cut those out first. And then as I was doing that, I started teaching myself a lot of vegan recipes. And so I was learning to make portobello burgers and teaching myself how to, you know, different recipes I could do with tofu or jackfruit, and doing all of these different things before I fully, you know, had went vegan, because I'm trying to learn about, you know, what is it that I like? What kind of plant-based recipes do I like? You know, what responds with my body really well, because everyone's different. All of those things are so important to explore before you're even fully vegan. So you really have to educate yourself and start trying new things immediately before you're fully through the whole process. And now what's awesome is there are so many really, really great alternatives to everything now. Mm-hmm. You know, even from when I started being vegan, there's been such a huge like evolution even more. And now more mainstream brands are incorporating vegan or plant-based alternatives into their brands. So really experimenting with all of those things and just transitioning yourself into it and doing as much research as possible is what is really going to help you to be able to understand and be comfortable with it and stick with it and kind of do this in a way that's really healthy for you and for your whole lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like you said, right now, there's so many brands that have been evolving over time and coming into even fast food chains that are offering plant-based vegan options, which,
yeah,
literally, I went vegan 4 years ago, and I would go to the grocery store, I'm like, oh, they only have one type of almond milk, or, yeah, you know, and you're just like, okay, great. And that was only 4 years ago. And now I go to the grocery store, I'm like, there's oat, there's hemp, there's every type of nut milk you can imagine and more.
Exactly.
So it's definitely like, if anyone is listening and they're interested in veganism, it's easier, I think, than ever before.
It totally is. Yeah, it totally is.
But beyond your public speaking, your fashion line and veganism, you're also really interested in animation. And I want to know, when did you start creating your own animations? And if you can give us some ideas on what you're working on right now.
Yeah. So animation was actually like my very first passion before I got into fashion design. Like, I've always had the environmental and the nature conservation theme with everything that I've done. But when it came to art specifically, I experimented with a lot of different types of visual art. But before I got into fashion, animation was like my really big thing. It has been something I've been, you know, really passionately continuing to pursue sort of in the background of the fashion design. So it's been really cool to be able to use this medium to talk about issues that are really important to me. I started animating really when I was like 4 years old. I was making flip books. Like the books that you flip. I was making flip books at 4 years old. By the time I was 8 years old, my dad gave me his old MacBook and I got this little drawing tablet, and it started going from like drawing a few frames of animation to several hundred frames of animation to several thousand. And we're like, okay, we need to get you like some professional software for this. And so animation for me is, you know, a really cool way to not only open up somebody's imagination, but also share your perspective on what's happening in reality at the same time. And so when I was 16, I was actually invited and commissioned to animate the opening of the first ever DigiReport presented to Congress. And this was under the Obama administration. And this was to get an American Museum of Women's History built in Washington. And so I had the, you know, the honor of doing that and going to the Capitol and presenting this. And that kind of shows you how all of your skills can make an impact in some way. And so while I was doing that, I was also still working on my own animated series and short, which is what I'm working on now. That's kind of like an adventure series, and it surrounds a lot of issues around the environment, around climate change, nature conservation, preserving our ecosystems and pollinators. So that's a series that I'm currently working on right now that I'm really excited to share, you know, and I've actually shared a clip of it during the TED Talk that I did in 2013, but it was kind of more of a conceptual clip I did when I was 13. So it's a story that I've been kind of crafting and developing over the years that I'm really passionate about. And that's one of my main projects I'm working on right now. And through my production company that I do have for animation, I'm also working with other companies and brands, not only as a sustainability consultant, but also through my production company, creating animated content around some of the projects that they're working on with sustainability and for other brands and other cool organizations. So it's really awesome to be able to use all of my different passions in ways that make a difference in the world. And I think people kind of don't realize something you might kind of pass off like, well, you know, there's just some interest that I have. It's kind of like whatever, like, I don't know what I can do with it. You can use any passion or interest or skill or hobby to make an impact in some kind of way. So that's something that I think is also really cool to share.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's amazing that all of your interests and anything that you have, even if it's like a small interest in, can come together and create amazing things. And I don't think people think that like you can be more than one thing. Like,
yes,
you are more than one thing at the end of the day. You're not just like, I am my job, I am this. It's like, no, like all of your interests make up who you are and they deliver a full package.
Yes. Thank you for saying that, because that's something that I've been really kind of, you know, making a point to people, is that I'm just as much an environmental activist as I am an animator, as I am a designer, as I am a writer. Like, all of those things make up me and what I do, you know, mm-hmm. like I don't have to be boxed into one thing or the other thing. They all work together with each other. And it's not, I'm not kind of chained to one thing or the other. All of them make up what I do and what I'm passionate about. And I think it's important for people to, especially young people, to be encouraged to pursue everything that they care about and everything they're passionate about. There are no non-transferable skills, and all of your different passions can work together in some kind of way. Everything that I do is centered around sustainability and art and creativity in some kind of way. And I always marry those two things together in everything that I do, in a way that's really organic for me. And so I think it's important, especially for young people as they're figuring out what they want to pursue in life, to really respect everything that they care about and see how they can take all of their skills and interests on their journey to figuring out whatever their career is.
Mm-hmm. Because you never know that where, you know, one small interest might lead you. So it's worth pursuing it at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
And one question that I love asking people, and this is kind of a note we end off on, is what does it mean to be a dreamer and a creator to you?
What it really means to be a dreamer and a creator is, first of all, it's about realizing how what you care about, how what gets you excited, what you're passionate about, how you like to express yourself, all of those things that just kind of seem like part of minutia and just part of personality, all of those things can be utilized to impact the world and impact your community in a way that you might not have even imagined. You know, like it, this, you can't even begin to scratch the surface of how one small idea that someone has had has completely changed the world. And I think it's important for all people to recognize their own power and their own place and to utilize what it is that they're passionate about, what it is they care about, to create the kind of world that they want to see, and to respect the power that they have in being dreamers and being creatives. I think that that is so important to recognize that, and especially for young people to recognize the power that they have to make an impact through what it is that they care about. Everyone's voice and everyone's passion has such a significance in a way that I think that the average person really doesn't realize. And just by you sharing one little thing with other people, sharing this one little kind of glimpse into, you know, this is what I care about, this is how I'm choosing to express this, it can change other people's lives. It can educate and inspire other people in a way that you can't even foresee, you know? And so that's something that I've really learned just by starting at 8 years old, just doing something that, you know, really made me happy through design, and also being able to share about the environment and the fashion industry's impact on the planet. All of those things that I thought were just kind of me expressing myself and just possibly hoping somebody would listen have completely changed so many people's lives and how they live their lives and how they move through the world and give back to the environment. So I think it really, in a nutshell, being a dreamer, being creative, is recognizing that the power that you have through doing what it is that you care about, doing what it is you're passionate about, and speaking to that and sharing that with the world.
Mm-hmm. I really love that take on it. And that's one of my favorite questions to ask in every episode, because it differs for everyone, of course. And to end off on this episode, I'd really like to thank Maya for joining me. I haven't recorded a podcast in quite some time, but it was such an honor to get back on here and talk to someone so incredibly inspiring like Maya herself.
Thank you so much. It's just been so amazing to be a guest on your podcast. And thank you so much for sharing my story with your audience.